fast, they would be trapped. Finally, the purser waved the paraplanes on and gestured for Shigar and Lorin to approach.
Kim Wilkins and Mayor Karukul,
he said, giving the hut the fake names they had settled on during the journey to Hutta. Cupping his hand over his credit chip, he slid it across the desk as though it were some kind of official documentation, indicating the backs of the Orderlands disappearing in a huddle into the palace proper. He added,
"We're with them."
The jaded eyes of the hut regarded him with a mixture of hostility and disdain. There was no way of telling which way he would fall. Was he automatically loyal to Tassah Barish, who had placed him in this position of responsibility? Or was he bored or drunk enough on his own small power to take up the opportunity Shigar presented? The contents of the credit chip were considerable, as they represented everything he had been given to fulfill his mission. If he took it, that would be money well spent. The purser swept up the chip and tucked it into the folds of his body.
"You'd better hurry,"
he rumbled in Hatties.
"They're leaving without you."
Shigar led Lorin away, feeling exposed under the emplacements and full of loathing for the huts and the corruption they embraced so readily. Most likely, the purser would betray them within minutes of letting them through. But if he could just get out of his direct line of sight, he and Lorin could disappear into the palace's throng, never to be seen again. They walked 25 paces without interference. At the first available doorway, he turned left, then immediately left again. When no sound of pursuit rang out behind them, he let the breath he'd been holding escape through his teeth. Lorin heard it.
"That went as planned, did it?"
"Precisely," he said with fake cheeriness. "You weren't worried, were you?"
"Not for a second."
She shook her head.
"Let's find somewhere quiet and out of the way. We need to change the way we look."
They squeezed into a niche, and Shigar gratefully rid himself of the mask and a large amount of his leather rancor riding gear, leaving him wearing just pants, boots, and a tight black vest on his upper body. He felt 50% lighter and was grateful to regain free use of his arms. Lorin unsealed her helmet and hitched it securely to her belt, then surrendered the cloak she had been wearing and gave it to him to cover his exposed shoulders. Rubbing dust into their cheeks and foreheads, she did her best to make them look as filthy as everyone else they had seen so far. Shigar felt dirty enough as it was, and not just because of the close, stinking air of Hutta. They were in, and the first real hurdle of the mission was behind them. Now they could get on with uncovering what Tassah Barish had found on the Cinzia. Leaving the rest of his disguise tucked well out of sight, they moved off into the halls of the palace, keeping their ears and eyes wide open for surprises. Chapter 8. At the rear of the palace, where a heavily fortified cliff provided a natural shield against snipers and missile attacks, was a private spaceport large enough for a dozen suborbital transports. 6 of the berths were already full when the Imperial envoy approached to land. None was registered to the Republic. One looked like a privateer, bulbous and battered, and extensively blackened across one side, as though by a powerful blast.
"Good," said Darth Kratos, when Axe communicated that intelligence to him. "We have the jump on the Republic, at least. Any sign of Stryver?"
"None as yet, Master."
"Keep your senses alert for his presence, but remember your place. Your desire for revenge comes second to the orders of